Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper here, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. I have with me today Britt Frilanis, and Britt has got so many different fingers in such diverse range of pies that I'm going to really, when I met Britt, I thought this is going to be very cool, and it's not just what she does, but it's that empowering women to have the capacity and the belief in themselves to do things as well, which is, I thought, was just brilliant. So let me tell you a little bit about Britt. So Britt, funny, good-looking and smart entrepreneur and equestrian. She's written those words, and you have to look at her. She's gorgeous. You'll have to agree with that. And you'll understand, I think, why when we talk about owning our ability to love ourselves and share ourselves, you'll learn from Britt there. Britt is training herself and horse in the Olympic discipline of show jumping, and she's growing her investment portfolio, building a business called Bronze Betty, and producing a podcast to inspire women to be unleashed. Britt is a loved partner, bonus mum to two beautiful children, and dog mum to a mini Foxy and mini Schnauzer. I like both those cute dogs are very, very cute.
They are gorgeous.
In 2019-20, Britt overcame a 10-year eating disorder called bulimia. Since then, she has gone on to facilitate nude women's workshops and started the Women Unleashed podcast. Prior to dedicating herself to being an entrepreneur and equestrian, Britt Frilanis was a commercial professional in the coal seam gas. This is what I told you. There's so many, that's so diverse here. This is really going to be very cool. So that's coal seam gas, liquefied natural gas and energy for 12 years. So Britt is going to have such an interesting conversation. I can't wait to learn more, and I'm sure you can't as well. So welcome, Britt.
Thank you, Janine. Thanks so much for having me. I love speaking about, you know, my journey and empowering other women. So thanks for giving me an opportunity to do that.
I'm read that through that, and I'm going, I don't know where to start. There's so much in there, but everything that I'm reading is very much about that empowerment. And This is what we're all about here on the We Are Women podcast, is that empowering women by learning from other women.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to start with the bulimia. Is that where everyone starts when they interview you? Because
Well, it definitely comes up. So happy to start there. You know, I think that was, it wasn't the catalyst for my, like, endeavor to empower myself, but it definitely was something, having dealt with it now, that just, you know, it's the greatest gift sitting on the other side of it. Yeah.
And that's not what a lot of people can do, is sit on the other side of it.
No, it becomes, it is part of their identity. And I completely get it, yeah.
And for yourself, how did you see that this is just something that's not acceptable for me to do any longer, and move through that?
Yeah, so I saw that at the time when I decided to, like, start dealing with it, I really just got flat in reality. Like, this is what I'm doing. I'm presenting myself as, like, a fitspo, healthy bikini body competitor, bodybuilder, going to the gym, looking healthy. And the actions I was taking that nobody else was seeing was contradictory to that. It was so opposite, and nobody saw it. So I felt like I was just living this big lie of a life. And through doing the personal development work, I was like, all right, well, it's time for this one to come out. Like,
and that's the thing, is people looking at you from the outside are seeing one person, And this is what, you know, the whole thing with social media and making judgment calls on other people in their lives, they really don't know what's going on. And
no, they have again, no idea.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's such an important factor. There's so much judgment and not just judgment of self more than anything else. But people standing outside go, wow, aren't they fantastic? They've got the perfect life, the perfect body that we're all seeking. And then again, that as you were in that situation, realizing that you weren't feeling very authentic within yourself when you're doing that.
No, not
so at how all. Did you take steps to stop doing that?
Yeah. It happened over about 2 to 3 years to really say that I was like done with it. The first step was sharing it with my family and my friends and telling them that this, you know, has what has actually been going on for me.
Had anyone picked up on it?
Some of my family members were like, oh yeah, we sort of thought, you know, that might have been happening, or not surprised, or you know,
they hadn't said anything.
Yeah, they may have said something, and I wouldn't have heard it.
Right. Yeah.
Because I needed to reinforce this belief
about
myself.
I'm just thinking about anyone out there, not necessarily with bulimia, but with other issues that people recognize it that are close around you, but as you said, you didn't hear it.
Yeah, you've got to be willing to hear it. You've got to be open. Otherwise, you just listen to it. Listen to the parts that you want to hear, basically. Mm. I started sharing it with my family and friends. And I thought that by sharing it, I was stepping off like the fiery cliff and into my depths of death. It was that scary for me. And when I started sharing, all I was met with just love and care. Like I just landed on a big fluffy cloud and, you know, everyone was so supportive. And what was really important for me to share or request of the people that I shared with was like, please don't feel like you can't check in with me. Mm. Like, please ask. I don't want you to feel uncomfortable about that because I'm committed to dealing with this and you are my team. You're going to get me there.
Yeah, no, that's great. And that enabling people to ask questions, that's a big step as well, because that gives them permission to even assist a lot more by understanding things.
Yes, yeah. So that really helped. And then I had a small group of, it was like 3 people that were on my hotline that in a particular order that I would call if I was like, wanting to have a binge or midway through a binge or afterwards or, you know, at any point when I'd like woken up and got, oh, fuck, what am I doing? Gone for it. So I would just call those people when I was in those really icky moments. And they are specific people because they've done personal development, like done some similar courses to me. So they could talk to me in a language that was going to like unstick me and make me feel safe and supported. And yeah, it was really, they're amazing. So amazing.
Having a team, and this is such an important thing for anybody, men and women. Women tend to do it better than men. I think I mentioned exactly the same thing on the last podcast to that. But women, making sure you find the right people, which is exactly what you did, because we want that tribe to be people who lift us up and not judge and pull us down.
Or sort of just pat your bottom, like
you don't
need people to do that either. You know, like these people could give me the support, but as well as like they listen, who I am for them is like a really capable giant human being. So they talk to that person, not the person who's just eating a block of chocolate.
Yes, definitely call you on it.
Yeah.
So were you doing the equestrian work, obviously, it's not something you all of a sudden one day go, I'm going to ride a horse and jump over things. You obviously have been doing
no,
it for a long time. It's a pretty weird question.
It is, yeah. My mum like rode horses when she was young. So as a little kid, I grew up around them. And then that stopped for a little while. And then I got back into riding when I was like 8 or 9. Had some lessons. We got our own horses, and I was competing and owning my own horses from up until the age of about 14. And then I didn't own a horse between that age of 14, 15 till the age of 29.
Okay.
So I basically stopped riding, or I'd ride occasionally, but nothing serious. And until last year, we
got back. So that, I mean, that's really stepping into an elite level, though. You know, going, well, I rode a horse at 14, and now, you know, working towards Olympic show jumping. That's a very big deal, Brett.
Yeah, it is. It is, and I was a really, really great rider at 14. One of the things that was disappointing when I stopped as a 14-year-old is a lot of people who I rode with, they were like, oh, you're such an amazing rider, like, you know, so sad to see you've stopped. But nobody ever said that when I was riding.
No, you're out there competing against them.
yeah, exactly. It's like, thanks very much for that. But it was something that I remembered going back into the sport, going, no, actually, I am really, really good. Mm. And I've always wanted to go to the Olympics. Like, no female and no Australian has ever won a gold medal in show jumping. So mm-hmm. I thought, why not? That's me. Let's go. And here we are.
Excellent. So how much training does that involve?
A lot of training. I'm at the stable like every day. I could be there all day, every day. And at the moment I have one horse. I'm working on getting, you know, a few more in my team. And I'm also working on setting my life up financially to support that as well. So I, up until the last quarter of last year, I was working full time, and now I work 2 days a week for a publicly listed energy company. And then I work 5 days a week for myself.
No, that's a good reversal. And we'll go into the work you're doing to, you know, fund that, because show jumping is one of those sports. One, right, you can come into it at any age again, because mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter. I know some of the elite riders that Australia's had have been quite senior and still competing at that world top level.
It's a great sport because you could be in it, you know, till you're 60 if you wanted to.
They have been. They definitely have. But it's one of those sports you also have to go and compete overseas quite a bit to build up that portfolio of competing, I suppose, and the on the international stage you're competing against, and knowing, yeah, I am good, really good.
Correct. Like, you want to be the worst amongst the best, so you can improve and compete against the best, rather than being the best amongst like an average group. And I would say, like, this is no I don't mean that anyone in Australia who rides isn't a great rider. It's just like, on average, the quality is not, like, it's average compared to Europe. Mm. And so, yes, you've got to be in Europe, or you've got to be in America, where there's a lot more money in the sport as well.
That's handy. That's
yes, but a lot more money that people spend, as well as, like, you know, win. But in Australia, like, equestrian or show jumping is, it's not really like as front of mind as maybe the NRL is for people. Mm. And you go to Europe, and it is almost like that for large populations. Yeah,
I know it's one of the sports that I've always watched at the Olympics. My sister had a horse years and years ago, but it was not because of that. It's just really entertaining.
Yeah, it is. I love it. And I can totally understand how people just like, how do you watch this all day? Because I can't do that with cricket. Like,
yeah. So. And there's a few different disciplines too. It's not just show jumping. There's a couple other disciplines as well.
Dressage, and there's eventing.
Mm-hmm.
And eventing is all three of the disciplines, so cross country, dressage, and show jumping. So it takes like your score from all three of those, and the other two aren't like, if you're just a dressage rider, that's all you do. You don't then compete in eventing. So they're like different people that do
Do that.
different ones. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit like the decathlon athlete.
Yes.
You know,
Yeah,
they just do
eventing is like
decathlon.
that.
They don't go out and do javelin as well. Or javelin. But, yeah.
Correct. Yeah, that's a great analogy. Thank
Yeah.
you. Yeah.
The and you know the again, I just love watching show jumping when I've had the opportunity to do so. And it's very it, the other thing that I love about it, it's the only sport where men and women compete evenly.
Yes, I love that about the sport too. Yep.
Yeah. And
Men and women compete equally, and there's no is it subjectivity in the sport? So you either leave all the rails up and you're the fastest or not. There's no like judging from a judge about how you did the pirouette or like none of that, which is very cool.
Correct. And that's the other good thing. That's one of the reasons I love swimming as well. The first person to the end of the pool wins. It's not
Yes.
done on, it's not subjective. You just time it out. Or as you said, you've got a time and you knock down rails or not. Simple as anything, a penalty for doing something, and there we go, they've got a winner. So you're not, it's all on you. I
Yes.
love that about any sport where it's all on you. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's
And
really cool.
speaking of, like you did say you love to watch show jumping. I have an event coming up on the 29th of April, and
Okay.
it's in a suburb called Larapinta, which if you go from the CBD, it's like 28 minutes, 30 minute drive out. And it's a really big event. People are competing for their like Paris qualifications. So we're putting on a show. You know, we've got a big
Excellent.
VIP marquee. There's a huge, general admission. There's fashions on the field, and
Oh,
yeah, so
cool.
if
What date's that?
the 29th of April.
Okay, this podcast will go out after that, but when I put some notes up now and things out, I'll
Yeah.
put that there, but I'll keep that for my
That would
reference
be
as
awesome.
well. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to see you there. Let me know.
Yeah, definitely. Are you all competing?
Yes, I'm competing there.
Yeah, well done.
Yes.
Yes, I so you know we've gone. I mean, that's a big deal in its own right. But you said that you're building a business that's supporting it. So tell
Yes.
me about what you're doing with that.
I'm not doing just one thing.
There is that. Yeah, that's good because we
Yes.
do need different streams of income when we're working as an entrepreneur, and some things will work, and
And
then all of a
something.
sudden 2020 comes along, and some other things don't work. So,
Yes. Yeah. And I'm kind of like throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah.
So we've got a bronze sculpture business that we started over COVID online retail, and now we're taking it more like wholesale and large custom sculptures for people's like landscapes or common areas in buildings and things like that.
So
So I'm
how
learning.
big are these? So we'll go into each one of these income earning areas separately.
Yeah.
The bronze sculptures, what size are we talking?
Oh, look, they could be anywhere from like your handheld
Yeah.
some like bottle opener, cool, something cool. I wish I brought something. Or
Props.
like a meter and a half sculpture,
Right.
like anything. If you've got a cast, we can get, if you've got the kind of example, we can make the cast and get it done. So,
Awesome. And that's something quite diverse. I don't imagine a lot of people are doing that. And
no, they're
that's,
not.
yeah, cool. So bronze sculptures, yes.
Bronze sculptures, the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So we're almost a year old now, and I am doing some work with a marketer to monetize that because I really love it. Empowers me, it inspires me. I love sharing that message. And so the Women Unleashed podcast, and then I'm working on a couple of deals at the moment, so I can't really say too much about them. But it's using my passion for empowering women, particularly in the STEM space, because I've worked in the energy industry for a long time, making connections and partnerships in that space. And then looking for having other investment opportunities with my cash, you know, through the people that you know and what they're up to and partnerships and
And is it something that you work on, obviously, as you get, I mean, you're probably well known in your field, the show jumping, the sponsorship going as well?
Yeah, I'm also working on that too, yes. So I've got a few people on my team that really believe in what I'm doing. And we are, you know, putting a bit of a strategy together about going out for sponsorships. And it's a big deal, like backing someone who's going to win a gold medal 10 years out or 8 years out, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's cool. And I know when, you know, working with people in business, there's a couple of ways when people go, decide what you're going to do, and then you figure out who your target market is, who your avatar is, you know, go for that and really stay focused on it. And that is exactly what you need to do. But when you're looking at a few different avenues for income, and you do that in each avenue.
Yes, that's what I'm...
So it's the same thing. As long as you don't spread yourself too thin, doing, you know, what am I doing? Where is my focus? And recognize, as you said, throwing spaghetti against the wall and figuring out what is making the money and what to stick with and keep going. It really makes sense to do.
Exactly. So I'm learning, a large part of what I'm doing inside the podcast is learning about like that process of creating your avatar, that person that you're actually speaking to and for. I'm doing that in every area of the businesses that I'm working on.
Now tell me about the Nude Women's workshops.
Yes. So, oh gosh, they were a lot of fun. I partnered with two really great facilitators, one who has done nude workshops in the past and then one who had a really unique dance like style or methodology, and she'd only done it clothed before, not nude. So we kind of combined the two and created this incredible like women's workshop where you got undressed at your own pace. You shared a bit about what you're dealing with. And then we were taken into this phenomenal dance practice, which really is just getting in your body and like moving whatever needs to move and breathing and you know, like vocalizing all sorts of weird sounds that just were there for you. It was a lot of fun. Like just, you know, and that was able to do for the women in my life. Like a lot of my friends came and then some people I did not know. It was really beautiful. And we had a photographer there to take really glamorous shots of the women so that experience that they had usually towards the last quarter of the session, that they could look back on that beautiful photo and be transported right back there and be super proud of their bodies and comfortable and
that's very cool. And what was the what do people say, you know, after experiencing that?
One person said, actually their boyfriend said when they came home, that there was a piece of them that was like no longer there.
Right. Okay.
Like a blockage or something that they had been really like thought was them that wasn't there. And they were just like free, clear, quiet in their mind. You know how you have that little voice that likes to chatter all day long?
Mm-hmm.
A lot quieter and confident.
That's an important factor, is that voice, because that's where the judgment and the, you know, it's worth talking to someone this morning, and they've come from being in a senior position and then bullied out of it and lost their identity, and that voice just filled their mind, and it's been an awful space they've been in for quite a while now, working their way through it. But that voice and how we use our words and how we say things to ourselves is so important, to recognize that we are only manifesting what we want to be, not what we making a judgment on ourselves at any time. And just
Look, it's really important to recognize that, like, that voice is there. It'll always have something to say, and it's not you, that voice. It's you get to choose which of those messages it's saying. You get to choose which ones you want and which ones you don't want, and then create the ones you want as well.
Yes, and while you're all dancing around nude, then you definitely got a chance.
Well, you're not even thinking about it. Like, after the like sharing circle, where everyone's like, oh my God, like, you're dealing with that. Oh my gosh, didn't know that. That really lets everyone's guards down, and they're thinking about themselves then, being with themselves and just moving their bodies. And it's just,
And that's part then, I know you talk about people taking responsibility for themselves and mind and body. Can you build on that a little bit?
Yeah, so my mental health wasn't always the best. Like, I had an eating disorder for 10 years, and I, you know, that I beat myself up, was really critical, very judgmental of myself. And the eating disorder was a manifestation of, like, the anger, you know, being built up inside myself for being that way with myself. You imagine, like, a little kid, they're born, they're like just love and play, and then someone starts being really mean to them, and they don't know why, and they're not doing anything about it. They're going to get really, really angry. So I had a lot of anger built up from being bulimic for 10 years, not communicating and saying the things that I need to say to people, not living authentically. And so that comes out, like, whether you want it or not, it affects other people in, you know, you might be judging someone. And you might think it's your judgment. Well, it is your judgment. And you might think, oh, well, I haven't said anything to someone, so how could there be an impact? And when you start looking, you'll see, like, a whole nother world of, you know, the way you treat someone because of the judgments that you have, and the behavior, like being manipulative to get what you want. Like, that was all me, you know, super manipulative, really angry. But I, you know, didn't know until someone showed me, like, a big mirror and did some personal development. And I just, oh my gosh, like, okay, it's not authentic, and I need to get responsible for that. I need to get my power back, because whilst I was, you know, being angry and manipulative, I felt powerless. I was a victim of my own crappy thoughts and judgments.
That's really interesting. You know, I haven't ever heard or thought of it from that perspective of, and I know what we perceive we project, but seeing it from that space of, then because you're angry with you, well, then you may as well be angry with others, or because you're judging you, well, I know you'll judge others.
Because quite often what you judge in others is what you don't like about yourself. So it's a projection always.
And so that comes up in every situation where you are thinking you're not in control either.
Yeah, if you like, you've got a bit of fear, you're scared, uncertain, you'll go to the most habitual thing there. And if that's lying, if that's judgment, if that's manipulation, you will just automatically start doing that to protect yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, hiding the bulimia, it's not just bulimia that people hide, or eating disorders. It's financial issues. It's domestic violence. There's a whole lot of things that we don't know from looking from outside in. We don't know. And then people make so many, you know, opinions on things like that.
But we're full of opinions.
Why didn't they just stop? Why didn't they just change that? Why didn't they go and get a job? Why didn't they do this? You know, it's that because they're making those decisions based on their place and where they are in the world, as opposed to, you know, walking in that other person's shoes. And part of that, there's a statement that you've given me, using the social agreement that the men are perpetrators of domestic violence to manipulate to get what they want in life instead of being straight, vulnerable and open communication and actions. Is this something that statement, I want some clarity around that, but is that something from experience?
I've never been in a domestic violence situation, and my partner has done like a lot of work on human psychology and all of that, and because I was the one like doing the manipulation and he was the one going, hello, like this is what you're doing, I have realized that, you know, men will control physically through violence, and women will control psychologically. And it's a lot harder to put your finger on or prove the psychological manipulation than the physical violence.
And often it can be both or all, financial the violence and psychological violence and, coercive control and all of that. But, yes, if you see someone with a broken bone or a black eye, there's evidence.
There's evidence. And what women need to be willing to do is actually look at themselves and go, well, how the hell did I get myself here? What belief or story am I telling myself that allowed me to put myself here? Because quite often, if you're a victim and you've got a story that you're a victim, you've got to keep that alive. And how do you keep that story that you're a victim alive? You go and find a perpetrator.
And it can be done on a, and the people who've listened to this before know that I talk about on a universal feeling. You know, we come to this human experience at this time to find that experience, to learn from it or to move through it, or it can be just how you're dealing and coping with the world.
So that's why I say what I say, and I know it's a pretty bold statement, but I found a lot of power going that way, you know.
And you're challenging yourself more than anything else from how you recognize that your behavior.
Correct.
And so, you know, obviously from your own experience, but there's more to it than that, isn't it? You know, that it's just, we don't ever want to look bad to other people.
That's our biggest fear. Yes, people's biggest fear, or what drives them to hide or not say things, is the fear of like looking bad.
Yes, whether we'll be liked by people or they'll judge us in different ways, and you know, it's a great way to define who your friends are.
It is, and like that's what I when I said social agreement, that's what it is. It's like looking for the people to like you rather than be authentic with yourself.
I know the last 3 years has created a lot of division within within friends and family and the community, because people made different health choices and, you know, what suited and worked for them, and that it bothered so many people that if somebody made a health choice that was different than theirs, that they then became they lost friendships, but they made real heavy judgment calls on those people. And I think that was an opportunity for people to recognize who they want to be around and who they don't want to be around as well. But it's not just that situation. There's a lot that pops up.
Yeah, look, it's such a great topic you brought up, because when you start living authentically, like, and start standing up for yourself, and you can still be great with anyone, you'll find that the people who agreed with you or wanted you to agree with them most, they'll probably stop hanging out with you because they can't get their agreement from you anymore. They can't, you know, because you're like, oh, okay, you can go, you know, smoke 10 fags a day. That's your choice. Like, I'm just choosing not to be around it, you know, like this is what I'm doing for my life. And it's okay if you want to do that. But yeah.
And the beautiful thing about that, it opens up the door for opportunity for other people to come in that are the supporters and are the people that you want in your life as well.
Yes. And I've had to let go of friendships so many times in hope and search of like a new circle. And it's scary. Like you think making like little kids can make friends really easily. And like adults can too, if we just cut the judgment and opinions. But it's still scary, you know, making new friends and letting go of old ones. And yeah.
Yeah. And I personally am a collector of old friends, and it was very hard to let go of things. But, and I sort of, you know, for me personally, had to actually break ties completely to do that, because otherwise it's still sort of feeling a sense of responsibility and guilt
Yeah, and like letting go or breaking ties, I think it's all the same thing, you know, whether you're it's that you don't go out of your way to contact someone anymore, or they do something and you say, look, that behavior is actually not okay by me. They get the clear message, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you've come from a male dominated industry, and I worked in a supply business, a very multi-million dollar business that supplied into mining and gas and construction, and used to go and visit all the mine sites and gas fields throughout Queensland and construction sites. And having raised, you know, two men, it's very
well done.
Yeah, men are different. boys and men are different. And so how did that help or hinder you in claiming your power?
Oh, so is having worked in a male dominated industry, did that help or hinder me claiming my power? Is that the question?
Yeah.
So I believe that if you believe in a bias or you acknowledge it, then it exists for you. And having been aware that other women have been impacted by this bias, I chose to go, you know what? Not me. Like, and I struggle to articulate how I did it because I'm not quite sure yet either, but I just knew it was like there was going to be lots of men around. So I was okay being like the only women at the table. I was okay being the very few female in my team. I was just like, okay, this is the reality. There are lots of men around. Okay, well, I'm going to have lots of men mentors or friends or colleagues or whatever. Like, that's the reality. There are lots of men around. And so I became successful because I didn't complain about there being a bias. I didn't complain about like a pay gap or whatever. Like I just got on with my job and enjoyed making connections with the men in the industry. Like I was never ever going to be successful if I did not make relationships and connections with men in the industry. It was just like,
and that's such an important factor, and it may be not so politically correct for me to say this, but again, those who listen to me know that it's probably, you know, it's very honest and authentic for me to say it. It's being aware that you're working with men and they behave differently. They speak differently. They speak directly. They're not necessary. And I've worked with a lot that are amazing. They're not necessarily rude, or they don't have to swear around you and all that type of thing. But they often find that they're a lot more direct, whereas women tend to, you know, be a lot more gentler in their expectations or directions or in a leadership role, whereas men go, this needs to be done, this is to be done. And then for the woman in that role, recognizing that it's there's no need to take offense to it, just get on with the job.
Yeah, like men, some men don't have the emotional intelligence that women do. And you got to acknowledge that. And I've noticed in my career that the men who have daughters are way more in tune and susceptible to like having females, like good female relationships in the workplace. And yeah, that was really cool to distinguish.
Yeah,
So
my son is in a leadership and construction role, and he's got a 7-year-old daughter, and it's the best thing that could ever happen to him.
100%. Yes, it is. It really is. Because you can then ask them the question, okay, well, would you speak to your daughter this way? Or
correct. And again, the guys I've worked with aren't necessarily rude. And plus, you know, with my age, they come from a different era. And things that they said definitely weren't PC at what we would judge it at the time now.
Yeah.
But it's just understanding and having that, you know, that emotional capacity to recognize that I need to do this differently, or I, you know, just get on with the job type of attitude.
Yeah. And like women are really great at like at the mind games. So I think when they mind game with each other, they kind of get it. But when they try that with a guy, it's just like doesn't work.
Yeah.
So they can't manipulate these guys. So they get frustrated because they need to communicate clearly, which is what we all really would like to be able to do. And in my experience, when I've communicated clearly, like I've sat down, I used to work in a joint venture, and you know, a secondee from a massive French company, you know, got flown in, big head of a whatever. And 2 weeks in, I sat him down and said, "Hey, I think you're awesome. I'd like you to mentor me. Would you like to do that? This is where I want to go." And it takes courage, you know. I wasn't comfortable having that conversation, and that's what, like, anything that you want to do to get yourself to the next level or progress is going to be uncomfortable.
And asking for it. That's the big thing too, is asking for what you want.
Yes.
It really, really does make a difference. So now, what, you know, with all that you're doing and have done, and you know, the journey you've had, your relationship with yourself, and you know, where you see yourself going in the future, that Olympic gold medal visualized, obviously. But how are you working with you?
A lot more straighter, a lot more authentic. I'm present to how proud I am of myself, and I take those moments to acknowledge, you know, if I've just had a meeting where I've, you know, asked for some really cool deal or package, like I'd acknowledge myself that that wasn't possible even 24 months ago or 12 months ago. So I'm working on loving all of myself. I still have a bit of a story that comes around that's like I'll never be loved. But I'm learning to be humorous about it and not take it seriously, because it isn't, it's not real. And yeah, I'm really proud of myself now.
And that's an important factor. You know, 99% of the thoughts we think aren't real.
No,
they're just thoughts. They're just random things that pop into our head. They're not real and not to be believed. They're definitely, And looking back at everything that you have done, what's your proudest moment?
Oh, my proudest moment. I'm like trying to look at what I wrote down, but I'll just, what's, my proudest moment is getting myself back. Like doing the work to be super uncomfortable to get myself back. Be my best friend.
And you know, out of everything you can control, that's the only thing you can control.
It is.
It's how you think.
Well, you can't even control the thoughts, they just right, but you can control which ones you want to listen to,
which ones you act on.
So I'd say like my proudest moment is just myself, like just getting myself.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's great to recognize that. And what I meant about thoughts you control is the, and as we said, the thoughts you act on, that it's that recognizing, yeah, what is true and what isn't true, and how you respond to those thoughts. That's the only thing we can really control is our response.
Yes, you nailed it, Janine.
And that's one of the things, you know, I talk people when I'm teaching communications is there's three ways to respond to every single situation, only three. One you don't like. One is you walk away from it. Mm-hmm. Two is you confront it. Three is you change your attitude towards it or your response mm-hmm. towards it. The only one you've got power over is the one where you change your response to it. Mm-hmm. The others still have a communication issue or problem.
Yeah, they do. And do you know that the goal in what you just said is that, like, you would tell your child to do the same thing. If someone hits you in the playground, walk away. Don't be their friend. Tell them that wasn't nice.
Mm.
And then go make a new friend.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And whatever works for you in that particular situation. Mm. Now, I always ask for three takeaway points out of everything that we've discussed. What are you thinking of those takeaway points today?
So anything is possible. Absolutely anything. You just have to put it out there and talk to as many people as you can about it.
To swim the English Channel now is possible.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's possible.
To get bigger feet.
Fins, you know. It's absolutely possible. In 2018, a guy called Ross Edgley, yes, he's younger than you, and he swam around Great Britain. So he spent 6 months swimming around Great Britain, and people had like attempted it before and died or been unsuccessful, and he did it. So anything is possible.
That's quite amazing, because those waters are very cold even in midsummer. It's really not a pleasant place to swim. So
no, he had a thick wetsuit on. His tongue fell out from being salty all the time, and it was quite gnarly. But
No, I don't have that as a goal, so I'm very cool. But it's fitting. It's figuring out, and that's part of, you know, the whole goal setting things. Figure out what you want, how you're going to achieve it, and then go, well, that's possible.
Mm, exactly. Mm. Yeah, believe in yourself. So anything's possible. The second one is there are no special unicorns. Like, we all deal with some version of a similar issue. So mm-hmm. just share it and be open about it.
Yeah. And I know a friend of mine who's written a book, and it's her second book, and it's called Teddy's Revenge. So it's Moana Robinson's written book, Teddy's Revenge. And she talks about her journey through having seven surgeries within a short period of time, which is something that happened to her. And the reason, you know, one of the reasons she shared it is to go that there's you know, there's things that happen. And how, if you share that journey, then, you know, she's had so many people go to her and say, oh, wow, it's really given me inspiration to deal with the pain I'm dealing with, or the, you know, the issues that I've got.
Yep, yeah. And the same thing happened with me sharing my journey with bulimia. Like, I have at least saved one person's life.
Wow.
Just by sharing it on social media.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you don't know how many people you touch. The ripple effect from this podcast, you know, is unbelievable. You just don't know what happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. So, and is there a third one?
The third one is be responsible for your joy as well as your sadness.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Love that. Mm. And finding those joyful moments and recognizing those joyful moments.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That. It's seeing, doing whatever you need to do to see the joy or create the joy.
Yeah.
Rather than rely on somebody else being your source of joy.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
That, and that's, there's a great book again called Happy for No Reason by the name might come to me. That it's called Happy for No Reason, and it talks about how you can just be happy for no reason. It doesn't have to be when you've lost 10 kilo or when you go on your holidays. It just is. Now, I'm sitting here looking out my window at the moment, and there's three crazy birds that are jumping around on the tree, and they've distracted me a bit because they've just been quite funny in what they'd been doing. And then there was a peewee out the other windows open, and there was a little come out on the recording, this really loud peewee who visits at lunchtime each day and sort of gets upset when there's nobody paying attention to it. So, you know,
like a feed, yeah.
Yeah, but they're things that make me happy. They don't have to be anything really crazy big and recognizing. Mm. And usually I'll say, just instead of focusing on all the red lights that you get on the trip, focus on the green ones.
Yeah,
that's lovely, and that's great. Perfect. How can people get in touch with you, find out? Well, we've got following your show jumping, we've got looking at your bronze, and then we're still doing the nude women.
Not doing the nude anymore. However, if you do want it, I'm happy to put that together because I've done it before now. So you can contact me on LinkedIn at Brit Philanis or Instagram at Brit.Philanis.
Mm-hmm.
They're like the two best ways to get in contact with me.
Excellent. And those details will be on the show notes also. It's been a really interesting, diverse and empowering conversation, Brit. I've loved it.
Thank you, Janine. Thanks for asking me to be here today. I've really, really enjoyed myself.
Yeah, thank you. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. Remember to jump on JanineVosper.com, book a discovery call. We can have a conversation about how I might help be able to assist you in a diverse range of life, business, or if I can't help, I have got a resource of people who I can recommend that you might want to have a conversation with. Have a fantastic day, week, month, wherever you are in the world. Enjoy. And as Brit said, find your joy, focus on the joy rather than the sadness. Bye-bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.